We'll listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers, remembers the oldies, the 50s and 60s.
A while ago, I interviewed Duke.
As I walk through this world, nothing can stop the Duke of Earl.
That is Gene Chandler, the legendary Duke of Earl. And today, it's my pleasure and honor to interview Butler. Jerry Butler, that is, the legendary Iceman.
Your precious love means more to me than any love could ever be. He don't love you like I love you. If he did, he wouldn't break your heart. Only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. Yeah, you gotta be strong.
No.
You better. My Huckleberry Finn.
Is one of the most beloved singers in the history of pop music. And he's on the phone with me right now. A little drum roll. I can't afford the drum, but he deserves a big drum roll. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jerry Butler. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Roddy. How are you?
I am fine. Obviously, you're fully aware that the NCAA basketball championship was between Duke and Butler, and I'm wondering, were you rooting for your namesake?
Who won?
Duke won by 2 points.
Then I was rooting for the Butler team.
Oh, okay. I wonder why. Did you really watch it, actually?
No, I really didn't.
Oh, okay.
But I would have been rooting for the Butler team anyway.
Oh, I figured you would have been. Well,
we'll get them next year.
Well, you know, the NCAA basketball tournament should use your song for it because, after all, only the strong survive.
You know, for a while when Bill Cartwright was with the Bulls here in Chicago, that was their theme. They
really?
Put it up on the Berto Center where they practice every day.
Yes.
Only the strong survive. And as a matter of fact, they wound up winning a championship there.
And they were using your recording of it?
I don't know if they've used my recording of it or not. I just saw the banner with the words on it, and I assumed that there was a connection.
Anyway, I am Ronnie Allen, and I'm talking with Jerry Butler. And your beginnings, I guess, Jerry, were kind of, how can I put this? How about the word poor? You grew up poor, right?
No. You were broke.
Broke?
And the reason I say that, I heard Bill Russell say this one time. He said, poor is a condition of the spirit.
I say.
Broke is just a condition of finance. I was broke. I wasn't poor. Because I always expected that one day I was going to be something. I was going to do something. I was going to make more money than my father made.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to live in a house. I didn't know if I was going to have an automobile or anything like that. But I figured I would be better off in the future than I was at the present.
You actually were born, I believe, in Sunflower, Mississippi?
Absolutely.
When did you actually move to Chicago?
Actually, I was moved by my mom and dad when I was 3 years old.
Oh, okay. So you don't remember Mississippi that much then?
Well, as a matter of fact, I went back during the summer and spent some time in a little place called Sunflower.
I see.
Which is really a little place. I mean, about a filling station and a grocery store is about all you get.
That's a really little place. You see the sign, Welcome to Sunflower, and then the next sign, like, is about a block down. It says, You are now leaving Sunflower.
That's the back of the sign.
It's the most back of the sign, okay. You lived in a housing complex. It was called the Cabrini Green Housing Complex?
Yes. The reason the name was situated the way it was an Italian neighborhood. Nuns of the Catholic Church was named after her. So it was the Mother Cabrini Homes.
Right.
And then in later years, they built some high-rise apartments so that they could put more people in, and they changed the name to Cabrini Green.
Now, I understand that you performed in a church choir with Curtis Mayfield.
Let me correct you again.
Go ahead.
He performed in the church choir with me.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you're qualifying all of this. All right. Well, can we compromise and say the two of you perform together?
That'll work. And the reason I said that is because somebody once asked Scottie Pippen, and I'm always relating to these Bulls,
mm-hmm.
how it felt to play with Michael Jordan. And he said, no, Michael played with me.
Ladies and gentlemen, you never knew that Jerry Butler was a comedian. Now you're finding that out today. Any rate, how long did you sing in that choir?
Actually, that choir lasted for about maybe 2 or 3 years. It wasn't really a choir. It was a musical group of about 5 young men. Curtis's 3 cousins, myself, and Curtis Mayfield.
There was some sort of a group called the Northern Jubilee.
That was it, the Northern Jubilee Gospel Singers.
Okay.
And then after the Gospel Singers thing went its own separate ways, we formed a group that I asked Curtis to join. Called The Impression.
And that brings us to the song that you wrote, I believe, For Your Precious Love?
Yes, I take the credit and the blame.
And I don't think there's too many people blaming you for it.
It was a poem that I was writing as a teenager. We just kind of changed the way it was structured from a piece of poetry into a song. Curtis, of course, playing guitar, added volumes to whatever the lyrics were. The rest of it just kind of fell together with a bunch of young guys harmonizing in the basement.
It got to number 11 on the chart, and little did people know that the Impressions, who are basically your backup group, would go on to major stardom on their own. For Your Precious Love, Jerry Butler and the Impressions, a song that
never grows old.
How's that?
That sounds good. I like that.
So pretty. I don't think they write too many songs like that these days, do they?
Well, you know, it was very interesting because that was a period when you had songs like Only You.
The Platters.
Yeah, the Roy Hamilton,
so many
wonderful songs that he recorded back in the day. Ebb Tide and Oh My Love, My Darling, I've Hungered for Your Touch.
A live performance, ladies and gentlemen, by Jerry.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, that was on Jeff. But actually,
Jane Melody.
The Righteous Brothers did not have the original on Unchained Melody, contrary to what many believe. Actually, Al Hibbler, along with Les Baxter, had versions of that song, and also Roy Hamilton, too.
Exactly.
That predated the Righteous Brothers recording.
Almost by 10 years.
I am Ronnie Allen talking to Jerry Butler, who definitely made an impression with that first record. Here's an interesting question on For Your Precious Love. It was Jerry Butler and the Impressions. Did you consider yourself as an actual impression?
Yes, that was the way we went to the label. We went to the label as the Impression. The woman who owned the label, Vivian Carter Brackett, which is where the VJ came from, said because of an incident she had with Pookie Hudson of the Spaniels, that if they ever walked through the door again, a group of young men, and one of them was the lead singer and had a unique voice or style, that she was going to give him top billing because groups were notorious for breaking up and she didn't want to lose all that she had at the same time.
I see.
And so that was the reason that they put Jerry Butler in front of the Impression. Mm-hmm. And eventually it was what broke the group up.
So it was a two-edged sword, so to speak. Anyway, we're going to move now a couple of years forward to 1960 to a song that I find very interesting because you never sing the title, talking about He Will Break Your Heart. Curtis wrote this song, right?
Yes. Actually, Curtis and myself.
Oh, you co-wrote it with Curtis?
Yeah, Curtis co-wrote it with me.
Oh, Curtis co-wrote it with you. All right. Were you aware that you never actually sing He Will Break Your Heart? You
because always we changed the title to be grammatically correct.
Oh, okay.
He don't love you like I love you is incorrect.
He
doesn't love you like I love you is too long.
Yes, right.
He Will Break Your Heart fits, but it doesn't have a darn thing to do with the song.
I think I got it.
Okay.
We're going to listen to it right now, and this is from the year 1960, and it got to number 7 on the chart. Now, actually, this is billed as a solo record, Jerry, but there's the harmony part in there, and let me guess, Curtis was singing with you.
Yes, you got it.
He don't love you like I love you. If he did, he wouldn't break your heart. He don't love you like I love you. He's trying. You've been dating. Whoa, I've got a feeling he's gonna put you down. Because he don't love you like I love you. If he did, he wouldn't break your heart. He don't love you. All the great quotations. He says the things I wish I could say. Whoa, but he's had so many rehearsals. Girl, to him it's just another play. But wait.
Great sound, Jerry Butler. He Will Break Your Heart. Now, years later, talking about a great copyright, some obscure group named Tony Orlando and Dawn, they took your song and they said, we're going to put it out, we're going to do our own version of it, but we're going to change the title. And they changed it to He Don't Love You Like I Love You.
Which just shows you that they were not caught up with being grammatically correct. So they just said, look, the song says He Don't Love You Like I Love You, and that's what we're going to use.
Right.
And the devil take the hindmost. They used what I later learned was creative license. Hey, we had been to high school and had a little bit of knowledge. We didn't want people to come teasing us about how grammatically incorrect our titles were.
I'm telling you what the next one is. I'm telling you what the next one's going to be. Any idea what the next one's going to be?
Let me guess. I'm telling you.
No, it's Moon River. No, only kidding. No, Moon River will be up after this one. What can you tell me about I'm Telling You?
Well, actually, I'm Telling You is another one of my lyrics and Curtis's music. It was designed to be a follow-up to He Will Break Your Heart. It was also trying to move us from what was then known as rhythm and blues to a level known as folk music. And so you will hear in the lyric that it's not about love for man and woman, as most of my records were, as it was about a relationship with the entire family.
I'm a telling you, I'm a telling you, I'm a telling you, I'm a telling you, I go to work, I try real hard to do my job, but before the day is gone, I find out I've done something wrong. I'm a telling you, oh, I'm a telling you, I'm a telling you, oh, I'm a telling you, days are getting longer and my nights are getting shorter and my way gets darker and my work gets harder now. When I get home, the wife is mad, the little girl, she's feeling bad. Little Junior, he's got the blues, says he needs a pair of baseball shoes. I'm a-telling you, oh, I'm a-telling you, I'm a-telling you, yeah, I'm a-telling you. Days are getting longer and my nights are getting shorter and my way gets darker and my work gets harder now. And everything that I do, I'm trying to make one dream come true. And maybe someday, Lord, I'll find satisfaction and peace of mind. I'm a telling you, yeah, I'm a telling you, I'm a telling you, oh, I'm a telling you, days are getting longer and my nights are getting shorter and my way gets darker and my work gets harder now.
He just told you what that was about. That was Jerry Butler, and I'm a-telling you, and I'm a-telling you that my name is Ronnie Allen, and I am talking to the Iceman. And before I go to Moon River, which I guess in many respects, well, you have a couple of signature songs, I'm sure, but I guess Moon River would have to be one of them. Before we get to Moon River, when were you dubbed the Iceman, and how did you feel about it?
I was appearing at a concert in Philadelphia at a place called the Uptown Theater. George Woods was the promoter of the show, and I'm thinking that we are probably now looking at For Your Precious Love. I Have Left the Impressions. I'm doing a standalone.
Right.
And the sound system went down, and because the theater wasn't really that big and was acoustically very well designed, I kept singing without the aid of the microphone.
Wow.
And when I finished For Your Precious Love, the audience stood up and hooped and hollered, and George ran on stage and said, that's the coolest thing I ever saw. So cool. I'm going to call you the Iceman. And then the next morning, he went to his radio station, WDS, And he started it. He said, I'm going to give this guy a nickname that he will carry with him for the rest of his life. And so he started it. Other disc jockeys and promoters passing through the town caught on to it. And as they say, the rest is history. So much so that in later years, I took out a registered mark on the name.
Really?
Yeah.
So you have a trademark on Iceman?
I do.
Anybody who wants to use Iceman for any other context, they have to contact Mr. Butler.
Yes, especially if it's in the field of music.
I assume you liked that name.
Oh, I love it.
What's not to like?
I love it so much, as a matter of fact, it was on the ballot when I ran for a seat on the Cook County Board of Commissioners.
Right, and at the end of the show,
we're
going to talk about that at the end of the show. We're going to talk about your political career, which is goes beyond the musical career. 1961 was the year for I'm Telling You. It was also the year for a song that has become so much associated with you. The interesting thing about this song is this song has been associated with three different people. First of all, the writer of the song, the late and great Henry Mancini, and somebody named Andy Williams also did it, but he didn't have a hit single on this. Andy did it as an album cut and did it many times on his TV show. But you, Jerry Butler, had the hit vocal single of a song that became a classic called Moon River. And what could you tell me about the song?
You know, that particular song, there's a whole book that could be written about Moon River. First of all, it was written by Johnny Mercer and Henry Mancini. Johnny Mercer at one time had been a big executive at Mercury Records.
Now, he also founded Capitol Records, by the way.
And I don't know how many songs he has to his credit, but I'd probably imagine it's in the thousands.
Yes, you're right.
At any rate, there was a man by the name of Henry Walpin, who was the president of Famous Music, which was Paramount Music Publisher in New York. He was going to fly out to Los Angeles to see how many recordings he could get, which was his job as the agent for the song. And on his route to Los Angeles from New York, he stopped off in Chicago and he showed a demonstration version with Henry Mancini's orchestra and vocals doing Moon River. And he said, we think that this song is going to win an Academy Award. Audrey Hepburn and Mickey Rooney are in this film. It's going to be the film of the year. And we want to get as many covers on it as possible.
The film was called Breakfast at Tiffany's. Before we hear your version of the song, I just want to play just a small portion of the Henry Mancini version, which was in three-quarter time. Go Walls.
Absolutely.
A little bit of Henry Mancini's version of Moon River, and the song got to you, and you changed it around a little bit.
Calvin Carter, who was the A&R director at VJ, gave it to Curtis and I, and Curtis and I took it and went up to a place called Idlewild, Michigan. And while we were there, we started working with the song. By the time we got back to the studio with the song, we said to ourselves, you know, black people don't waltz. So we need to change this rhythm from three-quarter time to 4/4 time.
Right.
We changed the rhythm to 4/4 time, and we found out that it had a beautiful cha-cha rhythm to it. And as you know, in those years, 61, 62, the biggest dance craze around, other than the twist, was the cha-cha.
Yes, absolutely.
And
yeah.
So we took that. Calvin Carter said, we're going to put a little country harmonica in here to give it some flavor. We're going to do a little twangy guitar to give it some soul.
Right.
And we're going to sing this thing like nobody's ever sung it before. And that's what we did. And as a matter of fact, Mancini and Mercer took out a full-page ad in Billboard and Cashbox saying that there were three people most responsible for Moon River's success and winning the Academy Award: Johnny Mercer, Henry Mancini, and Jerry Butler.
Cry!
such a lot of world to see. We're after the same rainbow's end, waiting round the bend. My huckleberry friend.
There was something very special about your version of that song. I guess it's a song you could probably never do a concert the rest of your life without doing that song. I think that's fair.
Well, I guess we could, but I wouldn't.
But you wouldn't. Okay. We're going to move now to 1962, and this is a song called Make It Easy on Yourself. Who wrote the song?
Burt Bacharach and Al Davis. Very great songwriter.
When they wrote a song a few years earlier called The Blob, I don't think people realized how great they were. I don't know if, I guess that was a Bacharach David song, The Blob. You remember The Blob?
Nope.
Here's a little bit of it, just for fun.
Okay.
Beware of the blob, it creeps and leaps and glides and slides across the floor, right through the door and all around the wall. A splotch, a blotch, be careful of the blob.
That was just a little bit of The Five Blobs and The Blob. One of the first hits by Burt Bacharach and Hal David, but they went on to better things like Make It Easy on Yourself. How did you get to record this song?
We had just finished having success with Moon River, and again, Paramount Pictures was in the mix, and they wanted to get something that they felt would make a lot of sense. They had Burt Bacharach to record it on a young lady by the name of Dionne Warwick. Flo Greenberg, who at the time owned Scepter Records, that was the company that Dionne was recording for, didn't like the song, didn't think that it was commercially viable. And so Eddie Wolfen and the folks at Paramount sent a version to me with Dionne singing it as a demonstration record. And I said, this is a great song. Calvin agreed with me. We went to the studio and we recorded it.
So very hard to do. If you really love him, then there's nothing I can do. Don't try to spare my feelings, just tell me that we're through. And make it easy on yourself. Make it easy on yourself. Cause breaking up is so very hard to do. And if the way I hold you can't compare to his caress, no words of consolation will make me miss you less. My darling, if this is goodbye, oh my darling. waking up is so very hard to do.
From the year 1962, Jerry Butler and Make It Easy on Yourself.
Though it was never a big success in the sense that it went to number one, it was very successful in that it's been recorded by so many. Dionne Warwick later on would record it, the Walker Brothers, so many artists.
Moving right along down memory lane to the following year, 1963, and you did a song called Need to Belong.
This was Curtis Mayfield in transition. He was moving from songs like The Minstrel and Queen and Shorty Jones and some of the novelty tunes that he was writing as a teenager to a more serious state of mind.
Okay.
And Need to Belong was just in front of the songs like We're Winner, Keep on Pushing.
Yes.
People get ready, say it's all right.
Before I play it, I have to tell you that whenever I do interviews, I seem to always bring out the dogs in the background. I did one with Jimmy Rogers and introduced Jimmy. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Jimmy Rogers. And the next thing I hear is, and then Jimmy says, listen, Ronnie, could you wait a few moments? I'm not ready. And this was on live radio.
I understand.
At least your dog is in the background. Okay, what's the dog's name?
The dog's name is Mitzi. M-I-T-S-I.
Right now, going from the ridiculous to the sublime, the serious side of Curtis Mayfield, and beautifully interpreted by Jerry Butler, here's the song, Need to Belong.
I need to belong to someone. It hurts to be known as no one. Will ever some sweet girl bring love into my world? Cause I need to belong to someone. I wanna be kissed and held tight. Want to be missed on a cold, lonely night. Somebody hear my plea and call out to me, cause I need to belong to someone. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. No one cares for me. I've never known sympathy. I hide my needs from the world with a smile, but understand I'm only a man, and a man
belongs,
yes he does,
to someone.
A man hates to be known as no one. Will ever some sweet girl bring love into my world? Cause I need to belong to someone. Oh, I hide my needs from the world with a smile, but understand I'm only a man, and a man needs to belong to someone. A man hates to be known as no one. Oh, send me a girl to bring love into my world, cause I need to belong to someone.
Need to belong to someone.
Need to Belong, Jerry Butler, and every year he's having more and more hits. You had a lot of blessings back then.
Yes.
The next record we're going to play had an added dimension in that this was a duet. It wasn't with Curtis Mayfield, but a wonderful lady named Betty Everett.
Yes.
What could you tell us about Betty Everett and your working with her?
Singer. Had one of those natural tears in her voice that at any time she sang. Well, you know, she started with a song called the Shoop Shoop Song.
Yes, it's in his kiss, the Shoop Shoop Song, yeah.
And that was the first time I heard it. And my wife and I, we were coming back from the Bahamas, and we heard a group over there singing Let It Be Me, the Everly Brothers song. And I said, you know, that's a great song, but it's been miscast. I don't think two brothers should be singing that song. And so I'm going to go and find a lady to sing the song with. We get back to Chicago, and Calvin Carter said, Jerry, we got a hit on a girl by the name of Betty Everett called the Shoop Shoop Song. And I heard, I said, she's got a marvelous voice. And I told him about the idea of recording Let It Be Me as the male-female duet. He said, oh, that's sensational. And so she and I went into the studio, and as a matter of fact, did an entire album. The album was titled Delicious Together, and Let It Be Me was the lead song from that album.
So I beg you, let it be me. Don't take this heaven from one. If you must cling to someone, now and forever, let it be me.
Got to number 5 on the chart, and did you know that at that time, in terms of chart peak, it was your most successful record up to that time?
No, I didn't know.
I may just be making this up. I may be fibbing, but I want to make sure. I'm gonna just look at my book real quick. I wrote it down, and I think it got to number 5, and here it is. Let It Be Me got to number 5. So it was
all right.
Gospel truth. It's really something when you could take a song that was associated with, you know, somebody else and put your own stamp on it. And I agree with you. That's a great male-female song. Sadly, Betty Everett is no longer with us. What a great talent she was. Now, I seem to recall she did was it a PBS show that she did? And then shortly after that, she passed away?
As a matter of fact, you're right. That was the last time she and I did Let It Be Me together.
But she died a few months later?
Yes.
Every so often they rerun some of those old shows.
Yes, indeed.
You co-wrote a song with Otis Redding, which was called I've Been Loving You Too Long. Came out in 1965. Were you very friendly with Otis?
Actually, this is an interesting little story. I'm going through Atlanta, Georgia to Buffalo, New York.
Right.
And in the airport, we went to what Delta Airlines had a place called the First Class Lounge. I go in there to wait for the plane, and there's Otis. Uh-huh. And he said, "Hey, Jerry, where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to Buffalo." He said, "Me too." We wound up on the same show in Buffalo.
Wow.
And so after the show was over, two young guys in town, nothing to do, said, "Let's go up and mess around with some songs." And so we went upstairs to the room, started messing around with songs, and this song, "I've Been Loving You Too Long," was one that I had not completely finished, and I gave it to him on a tape.
I see.
As to what we had. He then recorded it, and next time I heard it, it was his version of "I've Been Loving You Too Long." I've heard many versions of it, none that compares with what he did with it.
I've been loving you too long to stop now. You attack and you want to be free. My love is growing stronger as you become a habit to me. Ooh, I'm loving you too long. I don't want to stop now. Oh. With you, my life has been so wonderful. I can't stop now. And your love is growing cold. My love is growing stronger as our affair grows old. I've been loving you, oh, too long, to stop now. Oh, 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 I've been loving you.
Redding doing a song co-written by himself and the gentleman I'm talking to on the phone, Jerry Butler. "I've Been Loving You Too Long." You wrote that song, it was in 1965. 1968, you had a song called "Hey Western Union Man." Does Western Union still exist right now, or did they close up shop? I mean,
no, they're still around.
They
don't do
telegrams.
Western Union anymore. The only thing you can do now is get money through the Western Union.
Oh, okay, but they don't have the standard telegrams anymore?
Nah. That's all been replaced by email.
Yes, you know, everything is online and computers and everything.
This was the first album that Gamblin' Huff produced on me. Western Union Man was one of the songs that I co-wrote with those two brothers.
Gamble and Huff and Butler.
There it is.
Think she's affording me. for hours and hours. Send a telegram, send a telegram. Hurry up, send a telegram, man, to my baby. You hear what I say? Oh, Western Union, man, send a telegram. Oh, send a telegram to my baby. Western Union, man, hey, send a telegram. Oh, send a telegram, send a telegram. Tell me, have you got a boy you can send? Well, this is what I want him to do. Put him on his bike right away. See if he can get my message through. Date it tomorrow, but mail it right away. I want the girl to know that I missed her. Something like yesterday. Send a telegram, send a telegram. Whoa, send a telegram, man.
That was Hey Western Union Man, sung by Jerry Butler, co-written by Jerry Butler, and I assume you still get royalty checks for many of these songs.
As a matter of fact, I do.
I am so glad.
Not nearly as glad as I am.
That's positively true.
We have three more songs right now, and the next one turned out, in terms of chart peak, to be the biggest record that you ever had. Came out in the year 1969, got to number 4 on the chart. Title of the song, Only the Strong Survive. Were you still with Gamblin' Huff?
As a matter of fact, yes. Western Union Man, Never Gonna Give You Up, Only the Strong Survive, were all in the first album that we did with Gamblin' Huff,
right,
which was entitled The Iceman Cometh.
The Iceman Cometh, and that happened to be a Eugene O'Neill play?
Absolutely.
I remember that.
I think it was on Broadway at the time that we came up with the idea to call it that.
Oh, I remember it on TV when Jason Robards Jr.,
right,
was in that, yes. Did you have a special feeling when this got released that this was going to become your biggest hit?
Not really. You know, because songs are just special pieces of your life and written in times that are always special to you. And all of them, though they come from the same source, are different. And so you always have a special place in your heart for them.
Who wrote the song, Only the Strong Survive?
Gamble, Huff, and Butler.
Oh, okay. I know them. They also wrote Hey Western Union Man.
Yes, they
did. That's where
I
heard of
them.
Never
Gonna Give You Up and A Brand New Me. We had a wonderful time writing songs together. I am one of the few artists that they've ever collaborated with in that manner.
I remember my first love affair. Somehow or another, the whole darn thing went wrong. But my mama had some great advice, so I thought I'd put it in the words of this song. I can still hear her saying, boy,
boy, boy,
boy, I see you sitting out there all alone, crying your eyes out, cause the woman that you love is gone. Oh, that's gonna be a whole lot of trouble in your life. Oh, so listen to me, get up off your knees, cause only the strong survive. That's what she said, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. Yeah, you gotta be strong. You better hold on. Don't go around with your head hung down. Well, I wouldn't let the little girl know, wouldn't let her know that she made me feel like a clown. But you'll never meet 'em if you give up. she said, oh, little strong survive.
He had a wonderful time recording the song, and he had a wonderful time making trips to the bank after it came out.
I agree.
I am Ronnie Allen, and I am so pleased to be talking to the man who the world knows as the Iceman, thanks to that DJ named George, or Georgie Woods. He was actually working at WDAS in Philadelphia. Boy, I'm glad that incident occurred, otherwise you wouldn't have had that nickname.
I agree.
Best thing that ever happened. 1969, you had another record that made the top 40, and it was called Moody Woman. Was this another Gamble Huff Butler?
You go to the head of the class.
Oh, got it. Anything special about this recording or this particular song? Was this
just the musicianship. You know, we used to take these songs to the studio, and the musicianship of Gamble, and especially of Huff, and some of the young people that were playing, just amazing how quickly they could find a groove and capture the essence of the song. Just wonderful musicians.
Oh, I love you when you hug and kiss me. I get the feeling that you really miss me. Girl, I can't stand it when you start acting funny. And look at me like I'm bugging you, honey. Oh, moody woman, you change like the weather. Moody woman, but you got it together. Moody, moody, moody woman, I love you. You bet your life I do. Oh, variety's the spice of life. Yes, the pain makes the pleasure nice. You make my day when you say you need me, but that's no way to play when you say you're gonna leave. If I didn't have you, oh, moody baby, I know all about you. Moody woman, can't live without you. Moody, 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 the woman I love you. You bet your life I do. Oh, moody woman, you know I love you. A moody woman, I think the world of you. You've been my whole life. Moody woman, I don't want to leave you. A moody,
someone's going to say Moody River. I keep thinking Pat Boone. Moody River. Okay. No, this was Moody Woman.
Right.
And it got to number 24 on the chart. Jerry, we got one more record to play, but before we play it, I want to cover just a couple of brief areas that relate to something that you've been doing outside of recording your own stuff. You have, in recent years, Jerry, served as the host of several PBS TV music specials. I believe they were called Doo-Wop 50 and 51, Rock Rhythm and Doo-Wop, and Soul Spectacular, and also 40 Years of R&B. Does that sound good?
Sounds good.
Okay. Your face has been seen quite a bit on TV. They do rerun these shows, don't they, from time to time?
As a matter of fact, they have rerun them almost every year since we recorded the initial one. People often wind up getting them and giving them as gifts.
Did you record a recent one?
No. I refuse to record anymore because I think the originals were just classic. Most of those artists have gone on, and I don't think we can ever capture the spirit of those first shows.
You also have served as the chairman of the board of the Rhythm and Blues Foundation.
I've had that honor.
What is the Rhythm and Blues Foundation?
The Rhythm and Blues Foundation was an organization started by Ruth Brown and Ahmet Ertegun, who were trying to make sure that artists from the earlier periods of rhythm and blues, the 30s, 40s, and 50s, would get commensurate royalties to the new kids on the block who are coming along now. Most of those early recordings were recorded by artists who basically had no representation, not good management, and after they had paid off the amount of money that had been invested in the songs, they were still not receiving any royalties, and so we formed the organization to try to go after those record companies to encourage them to do the right thing. And because we had Ahmet Ertegun on our side, most of those labels decided that they would do whatever Ahmet Ertegun did. Ahmet Ertegun gave $500,000 to start the organization, and the rest, as they say again, is history.
Also, you had a tremendous honor. You were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yes, sir.
And what year was that?
1991. January 16th, 1991.
January 16th? Yes. What was the exact moment? we don't really care about that.
Well, I'm going to tell you. The reason it was so vivid in my imagination, it was when President George Bush Sr. sent troops into Iraq.
Was it that day?
Yes, I think.
You were inducted along with the other original members of the Impressions.
Yes, sir.
Namely, Curtis Mayfield, Sam Gooden, Fred Cash, and Arthur and Richard Brooks.
Right.
It sounds like a law firm. Think about it. One thing I want to mention about For Your Precious Love, it is ranked at number 327 on the Rolling Stone magazine's list of the 500 greatest songs of all time. It's heavy stuff.
Yeah, and I consider that a tremendous honor. My little poem would turn into what a prestigious magazine like Rolling Stone to be one of the top 500.
The year 2000, you published your autobiography, which was called, I'm sure you thought about this a long time before you came up with the title, Only the Strong Survive. You wrote that with your brother-in-law, Earl Smith.
Yes, he wrote it with me.
He wrote it with you. Hey, Jerry, can I do some things with you that I could say that I did with Jerry Butler?
Yeah, right.
Ronnie Allen and Jerry Butler. Is the book still in print?
It is. Published by Indiana University Press,
right,
out of Bloomington, Indiana.
And you actually tell a lot of stories beyond what we even discussed today on this show, which is quite a few interesting stories here, but you talk about your bandstand appearances and the Apollo Theater and a lot of stories about not only your fellow musicians, but some political figures as well and serious issues. Only the Strong Survive, is it available like on the online bookstores and that sort of stuff, Amazon? And
absolutely.
Now, I understand for about 24 years you have been in politics. Now serving your sixth term in a certain office. Now, what is that office called?
I was elected to the Cook County Board of Commissioners in 1986. So I am now into my sixth term, Cook County Board of Commissioners.
Cook County around Chicago, is that where that is?
Chicago is the county seat of Cook County.
Oh, okay. I have not been out there.
Well, I understand. You know, most people think in terms of Cook County being part of Chicago.
Yes.
When in fact it's the other way around. Chicago is part of Cook County.
Yeah, but it makes me feel good because that makes me like most people. I don't see that such a bad thing. I'm like most people. I'm not the one or two people in the entire country that knew the correct thing as Jerry just described. I was incorrect, like all of you others out there.
What can I take?
You must like this job.
Well, it's a good job, and we've been able to do some things that were good. And, you know, the difference between politics and performing is that in your performances, you go on stage, you know right away whether you did good or bad by the reaction from the audience.
Right.
In politics, you can do good or bad and not find out about it until you're dead.
Jerry, this has been such a pleasure and an honor for me. I have just enjoyed this so very much because I've loved your music so much over the years. Before we play our last record, do you have anything to say to your millions of fans throughout the world who will hopefully be listening?
I say to them, as I say to you, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
You still perform, right?
Yes.
You still do oldie shows or like what kind of shows?
I just do shows.
Okay. I mean, do you do like concerts? Like, is it a Jerry Butler concert type?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we just finished one in Long Island last Saturday night.
We're going to close with a record that when I started working for Casey Kasem back in the year 1972, this was a record that toward the end of 1971, this made the chart, and then it carried over into 1972, and that's when I first talked to you back in early 1972 to talk about your latest hit, which was Ain't Understanding Mellow, and you did this with a singer named Brenda Lee Eager. What can you tell us about this Brenda Lee?
Well, one of the problems we had was that that was her natural name, and there's also another singer by the name of Brenda Lee.
Yeah, I heard of
her. And so the minute we released the record, the management of the other Brenda Lee wanted to sue us because they said people would be confused and think that it's this Brenda Lee as opposed to the other Brenda Lee. But once they found out that it was a natural given name, there wasn't much that they could do about it. The young lady came out of the Operation Push Choir and was with a group called the Piperettes of Freedom. She's just a marvelous, marvelous talent.
Jerry, thank you so much. This is Jerry Butler and Brenda Lee Eager. Ain't...
It's ungrammatically...
What was... What was that again?
It's ungrammatically correct.
Okay. I'm going to do that. We're going to close the show right now with Jerry Butler and Brenda Lee Eager doing a song whose title is decidedly ungrammatical. I mean, there's no way around this. Jerry, this is ungrammatical. Did that bother you? No? Ain't bothering me, he said.
Okay.
Ain't Understanding Mellow, Jerry Butler and Brenda Lee Eager. Thank you so much, Jerry.
Okay, right.
Remembers the oldies, the 50s and 60s.